to do, say, girl, I know you a little too tame. I'll be shooting that shot like...
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Soggy and blustery out there. Hello. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Ottawa Now. The time is 2:08, and I am sufficiently soaked from taking my stroll into the studio this afternoon. It looks like the rain has really picked up out there. No sign of snow just yet, and really not all that cool, but I found it to be fairly unpleasant still. We've got a snowfall warning that is in effect for Ottawa, 4 degrees. As you just heard, if you were tuned into the Vashi Capello's national radio show, Dave Phillips said that that rain is kind of making its way through the Ottawa area right now, headed toward Montreal, and that precipitation will change to snow. Unfortunately, winter is not done with us yet. We'll have the full forecast coming up, as we always do on the show, a little bit of weather, a little bit of time saver traffic, and a lot of news, which is where we'll start today. We've got the OPP joining us. Inspector Scott Wade will come on the show at 10 to 4 this afternoon, and we'll talk about the hundreds of stolen cars that have now been recovered before they could be illegally shipped overseas. It's part of Project Vector, which was a months-long police investigation. It was CBSA, Canada Border Services Agency, working together with various police forces to crack down on this. And we did hear from the commissioner of the OPP earlier today, Marty Kearns, about the stolen vehicles and how they were recovered from sea containers at the Montreal port.
Between December 12th, 2023 and March 29th, 2024, 390 shipping containers were opened here in Montreal, resulting in 598 stolen vehicles being recovered as a direct result of Project Vector.
He said most of the vehicles were stolen from the Greater Toronto area.
The primary vehicles being targeted were newer vehicles, including high-end pickup trucks and SUVs. These vehicles were connected to various types of violent vehicle crimes, including carjackings and home invasions.
So these vehicles get stolen, we know, from Southern Ontario, from Eastern Ontario, and then they end up in shipping containers in Montreal, and they're slated to be sent overseas. And if they make it overseas, then they're put up for sale, which is why we see all of these criminal networks so interested in driveways and mall parking lots in Ontario and other places in Canada, because they're able to get in, steal a car really quickly, and then it ends up in Asia, Europe, South America, the Middle East. These vehicles were apparently valued at $34.5 million. So they would have earned a pretty penny if they were sold on the foreign markets. And we'll get into that coming up. Funny enough, Eric, we're talking about stolen vehicles today. And we actually have Austin Lee joining us on the show to talk about a family that went on March break. They went on vacation and they left their car at a Montreal parking lot at a hotel. It was taken.
Yeah, we've heard way too many of these stories of people getting them stolen from hockey tournaments in Montreal or hotels or the airport. It's just getting to be insane how many times we hear of these stories. Hey, like we were going on a trip and we were at a hockey tournament with the kids and the car was stolen with all their hockey gear inside.
Or which is really expensive, by the way.
Exactly. Or even like at CTC with like people that are at the Sens games.
With all his work equipment inside. Yeah. The gentleman we interviewed had all of his work stuff in there, which is really expensive. So now not only are you out of your ride to get to work, you don't have your stuff to do the job.
Exactly.
We'll get into that coming up. And Austin Lee will join us on the show. I believe he's stopping by at 3:30 today with that story.
Yes, that is correct.
So we'll have back-to-back car stories on car theft, which is increasingly a number one topic of conversation on the show. If we're not talking about grocery prices and affordability, then often we're talking about that. The other big thing that we'll get to today, and this is our question of the day, an open letter by 51 people. Some of them are former politicians. Some of them are in academia. Some of them work in human rights or the arts. And they've all banded together. Some of them are religious leaders. And they've come together and they've signed this open letter calling for greater civility in Canada. In Canadian politics, yes, as in the discourse in the House of Commons, but just in general, in the public, in the streets, on university campuses, what they're noticing and what they're writing about in this open letter that was published in the Globe and Mail is a level of aggression and division and tension in Canadian society that they are increasingly worried about. Some of the notable signatories on the letter: the former Premier of Quebec, Jean Charest; the former Bank of Canada Governor, Mark Carney. There's film directors, there's religious leaders, and they're concerned because they feel that overt hatred is on the rise, that people can no longer simply disagree with one another and then go their separate ways, but that they say there's a level of belligerence that is on display, that people don't have it in them anymore to work together, and that we lean into these negative tendencies where we don't understand each other and we don't care to understand each other. We don't want to put our political differences aside or our differences of opinion aside. And so I found this to be a really interesting place to start the show today, because I was reading the letter and then I read it once, Eric, and then I read it again and I was chewing on it today. And I thought about it kind of in two different camps, because I thought about it as just a citizen of the world, somebody who goes about their daily life. And then I thought about it as somebody who is somewhat in the public eye, who's got access to a text board every day,
right,
who is on radio for 4 hours every day and television every night. And I thought about my differences in opinion based on which hat I put on.
Right.
Because if you asked me, in your daily life, are you seeing a lot of hate and vitriol? I see people being rude and impatient.
Yeah.
But I don't see overt hatred. I don't see those awful, ugly tendencies like the cesspool that we see that is X, formerly known as Twitter. I don't see people running around making bigoted or racist comments to each other in parking lots.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't see that on display. However, then if I put on my other hat and I tell you what I see and sometimes what is directed at me personally every day in more of a public facing role, then yes, I do.
Right.
So I was trying to make sense of that today. And are we talking about Canadian politics? Because I think when we were all thinking about Brian Mulroney, the passing of the former prime minister, there was a lot of romanticizing the past.
Yes.
And I think all of the tributes to him were fitting. He was a guy who was well respected and would call people up when they were in big moments of pain personally, when they had gone through a loss, or they were going to rehab, or they were going through something personally difficult. So many politicians came out and said he was willing to talk to you no matter your political stripe. And I think that's true.
Oh, for
sure. And, you know, that's why he was known as a statesman and somebody of great civility. That's how he was kind of mourned and thought of at his funeral. Excuse me. But the other part of it that I thought was that maybe we're romanticizing the past a bit, because it's not like the decorum in the House of Commons has been that great over the last 10 years. I wouldn't say it's since post-COVID that all of a sudden the decorum in the House of Commons has simply deteriorated. I think the behavior of politicians in general hasn't been great for a while.
Agreed.
So there's Canadian politics, there's the House of Commons, there's how politicians behave, and then there's how Canadians behave. And I want to hear from our audience today, so I'd love for you to write in.
Hey, my question for you today is...
Only one question.
Quick question.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Do you think that public discourse in Canada has gotten nastier? Is the world truly more divided and tense than it was a decade ago or 20 years ago? In your world, in your life? And then what about Canadian politics? You can tell me, and you were looking at both the House of Commons and your own life.
Yeah. And I mean, I fully agree, too, because it's one of those things where I have noticed the stress, the hatred, like you said, of a lot of different topics across the country, and just how things have been portrayed around the world in the last, like you said, 10 years, 20 years. I mean, I don't remember as many issues in that regard when I was younger and when I was back home in a small town in Northern Ontario and in high school and elementary school. But now it just seems like there's so much hatred spread across every topic that you can possibly think of.
Right. I would say I notice that people are unhappy and stressed and drained in my daily life, yeah. and that the affordability crisis has drained them of any patience. Oh. It has taxed them, and I understand that. Yeah. But I don't see hatred in my day-to-day. I don't see people screaming at each other and saying terrible things in parking lots or when they take their kids to school or when they're in disagreement in line at Costco. I see that when I come into work.
Yeah.
So and that's the difference for me.
Yeah. And I mean, I have seen verbal arguments when I've been working in retail and even just going to a store or at a mall, you see people yelling at each other and swearing at each other. But
is that being rude?
I don't.
Or is that a deep level of division that we've never experienced before in Canada?
Right.
Because that's how they're making it out to be in this article.
Okay.
They acknowledge that we've had divisions in the past, that we've always had many different opinions in Canada, but they go on to say that the tensions have escalated, that
yes.
the hate has escalated, that we need to do something about it. And they're asking politicians to come together to support hate initiatives, to strengthen what constitutes hate speech under Canadian law. And then this one I thought was really interesting, to fund the development of curricula in primary, secondary, and post-secondary to increase community-level empathy. And I don't really know what that would look like. I don't know how you increase empathy
right.
through a curriculum, but
yeah.
that's one of the line items here in their recommendations.
Okay.
So we'll talk about that coming up with Tom Mulcair. And I can see people are already writing in on the text board.
Yep. Somebody said, absolutely. There's toxic polarization everywhere. People talk without listening.
John from Renfrew says, absolutely. Too many changes within society over the years for everybody to be on the same page. It creates hatred and division.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also on that topic of people talking without listening. They talk without thinking ahead of what they're going to say and the repercussions of what you will say. I mean, everybody's guilty of just spewing something out before thinking about what the end result could be from that term that you use or that saying that you use. But yeah, it's definitely getting bad.
Speaking of seeing eye to eye and public discourse, as we chat today, please talk to me. I'd love to talk to you. Please sign your name and your neighborhood so I can give you attribution and credit for what you're saying.
Just dancing with my eyes closed.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
It's official, Ottawa. We are now the shawarma capital of Canada. Or so our city council says, as seriously as you want to take that. Today's city council was tasked with looking at a motion that came from city councillor Laura Dudas. And she was kind of pushing for this motion because she felt that given Ottawa and how many shawarma shops we have, the proliferation, the concentration of the shawarma in Ottawa, that we should declare our city the shawarma capital of Canada. And it looks like city council agreed with her because they unanimously approved this motion. And Mayor Mark Sutcliffe even got her a shawarma for the occasion. Okay, looks like we don't have that clip, but apparently we don't have that clip, but it did go through today. Apparently there are, 200 shawarma shops in Ottawa?
Yeah, there's about 200 or so looking, and which is apparently is backed up by Yellow Pages results, which I didn't even know Yellow Pages was still a thing. But yeah, there's over 200 or around 200 shawarma shops across the city.
Hoping we can get that clip of City Councilor Laura Dudas where she's talking about the number of shawarma shops that we have per square foot, which she says is more than any other city and is even beyond what they have in Mississauga, Ontario, where they have quite a few. Do we have that clip, Elsie?
Mississauga can throw down the gauntlet, but frankly, Ottawa will take the crown. This might seem silly or frivolous, and in fact, a little bit of it is in tongue-in-cheek, but shawarma in our city, in the city of Ottawa, is a huge economic driver. It is substantially impactful. It creates jobs for many of our residents. And a lot of these businesses are locally family-owned restaurants. It's a huge boon to our local economy.
As some people were writing in earlier today to Patricia's show, and questioning whether or not we really need to do this. Do we need to declare ourselves a capital of any food? Is this just a useless symbolic title? Is it helpful to anybody or is it nonsense? Well, Councillor Dudas did comment on that. She concedes that it's a bit of an honorific at the end of the day, but she doesn't believe it's a wasted effort. Here she is talking about the title and talking about the comparison to other competitor foods in Ottawa, like, for example, another culinary icon, the beaver tail.
We have enough room in our hearts and our bellies for beaver tails and poutine and everything that you think of that is distinctly Ottawa. But I think that the interesting part about this is we are an incredibly diverse city. I don't know if a lot of people would think of Canada's capital as being ultimately diverse, but we have such a unique population. And these shawarma shops demonstrate just that.
So it did go through today. I think they're just having fun with it. I see no problem with this, Eric. I hate when we waste our time on stuff that doesn't actually happen at the city level because there are so many important things that happen in municipalities. Municipal politics matters because it is the closest level of political sort of subject matter that people can touch and feel and see and really experience because it touches their lives. Potholes, roads, the day-to-day, garbage collection, etc. It does matter. But in this scenario, it doesn't bother me that they put this motion through because they didn't spend any time on it. So when people write in, what a waste of time. What is Ottawa City Council doing? Really? Get up to something better. There was no debate on this. There was no waste of time. This took 2 minutes. It was a cute thing that they did just for fun. Now they're moving on.
Exactly. And it's not like they were debating whether we should do this or we shouldn't do this. And there was no, I don't know, maybe there'll be talk at future council meetings of putting up a shawarma flag at City Hall or like a shawarma statue in Ottawa. But it's like this wasn't as extravagant as people think it has been. It was just something fun to be like, hey, yeah, we have a lot of shawarma places in the city. Why not be the shawarma capital of Canada?
And for example, it doesn't really compare to something serious like when they declared Ottawa was in a climate emergency, because then later that leads to a debate about what exactly that means and what sort of influence a motion like that is going to have on future decisions. Then later on, in fact, about a month ago, I had environmental groups, I had one of them on the show, that was angry at the city for these fossil fuel ads that had been displayed at city arenas and on city territory because they felt that this was in direct violation of the spirit of declaring a climate emergency. So even though something like that is symbolic, it's a stance, it sends a message, and then later on, it might result in a debate. Nobody is going to debate Ottawa being the shawarma capital, I don't think.
No.
Except for this texter who didn't put their name on it. Come on, folks, put your name on it. Please put your name on it. They're calling this an embarrassment and saying that city council has fallen to an all-time low. Folks, I think we can find other parts of city council disappointing that have nothing to do with shawarma. May I point you to Ottawa's large LRT project? May I point you in the direction of OC Transpo? I think we could, you know, maybe start there and then wind our way out. By the way, speaking of city politics, we will chat about Lansdowne on the show today and the pushback to the decision that just came out of the city's finance committee. Yesterday, councillors at finance committee approved a pretty critical step for Lansdowne 2.0. We'll debate that coming up.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hey, my question for you today is...
Only one question.
Quick question.
Question. Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Do you think public discourse has gotten nastier? Right into the show. Give me your name and your neighborhood so I know who I'm talking to. Do you think the world, Canada specifically, is truly more divided and more tense than it was a decade ago or 20 years ago? And I'm talking about your day today. Do you notice that people are more aggressive? Do you notice overt hatred? What about the state of Canadian politics and how politicians speak and how they relate to one another? I think when you look back, especially politically, that sometimes we have this tendency to romanticize, oh, it's not like it used to be when everybody was a statesman. Now, the House of Commons has quite commonly been a site for heckling and jeering and people behaving badly, politicians behaving badly. Are we now judging society based on virtual comments, based on the cesspool that is Twitter or Facebook commentary? I'd love to hear from you. Our email address is ottawanow@cfra.com. And the number to text, as always, is 580-580. Let's talk to somebody who used to be the leader of the NDP, Tom Mulcair, who's now CTV's political analyst. Hi, Tom. Welcome back.
Good to be with you, Christy.
We're bringing you on the show today because of this open letter that was published in the Globe and Mail yesterday. 51 former politicians, academics, religious leaders, and others have written this open letter, and they're calling for greater civility in Canada, not only in politics, but just in the world in general. The letter says public aggression and overt hatred are on the rise. They're calling on political leaders to urgently address this because they say it undermines the peace and security of Canadian life. What do you think?
Well, it's a very difficult piece to understand on certain levels. You sort of get an idea of what they'd like to be talking about because they hint all around it, that it's the current conflict between Israel and Hamas, pursuant to the horrific terrorist attacks by Hamas against Israeli citizens, and the ensuing war between the two, and of course, the equally horrific situation of young people dying and people starving, and people understand that it's got lots of passions riled up, but they hint around it, but they never quite get to it. So as a general proposition, I kind of like the way you teed this up, Christine, because I don't think that there's any evidence that things in our society generally, as you say, in our everyday discourse, how we deal with people one-on-one, I don't think that that's changed. I do think that there will always be flashpoints. When I was a student in law school, it was the Vietnam War. It was the big thing. You had young people in the streets, not only in the States, but even here in Canada, fighting hard, pushing hard. Young people were killed at Kent State by the National Guard. I mean, this was a really tough, serious moment, and it was pushing back against something they strongly disagreed with. So there will always be things that bring people out into the streets, and it can lead, yes, to bad behavior. Now, there's one thing that I do agree with, but again, it's so obscure how they, you know, they just give it a glancing blow in the paper. It's the role of the police in all of this, because I can tell you that there was a fellow who stood in front of a crowd and harangued and was essentially asking God to kill Jews, you know, take all, you know who they are, identify them, and, you know, and so forth. And it was dealt with, first of all, by the Montreal police, who didn't really do anything. And then they handed it off to the RCMP. And from what I know, nothing's actually come of this so far. And that's disquieting. We saw, I don't know if you saw the film of Melanie Joly, you know, the video of her trying to stop someone from aggressing her in the street. He tried to turn it around saying she was being aggressive with him. People know who he is, but he doesn't want his name to be used because they think it might hurt his job. She's walking on the street, and his words to her were, my job is to harass you, and you have no right to walk peacefully in the street as long as, and he describes the situation in his view currently going on in Gaza. By the way, even more disturbingly, talking about the role of police, is that I didn't know this at the beginning, but a colleague of mine confirmed it for me because Melanie Joly confirmed it. There was an RCMP detail with her, and they did nothing. And that, to me, is incredibly disturbing, and it goes to the whole point about how our politicians, especially federally, are protected. I was once a provincial minister of the environment in the province of Quebec. We always had an armed security detail with us at all times, private, public, 24/7. And it goes back to some horrible events that happened in Quebec. And I don't want anything horrible to happen federally for somebody to finally say, oh, maybe we should have done something a long time ago. But that was a very disturbing video of Melanie Joly being, you know, accosted by this guy in the street.
It's a difficult one to pin down, as you say, because you're right. They're talking about the Middle East in this piece, these 51 people that have penned this
open
letter.
Well, they are, but they aren't.
Yeah, they are, but they aren't. They're also, right, they're talking about the killing of a Sikh separatist leader in British Columbia, in the heightening of India-Canada tensions. They're talking about clashes between Eritrean groups at community festivals. They're talking about people not being willing to relate to one another unless they agree with one another. At one point, the letter says there's a need for Canadians to work together instead of retreating into their echo chambers. Well, I agree with that. I think we all should agree with that.
Sure, it's a general statement that nobody's going to disagree with.
Right.
Where are you going? Like, what's concrete? And so they're sort of imploring somebody, the powers that be, to do something
fix
about
this.
All this. Basically.
Exactly.
So, but there is one thing where I agree, again, with your setup to this, and it is the role of social media. And so you're talking about, you know, the discourse between and amongst politicians. Let's talk about the public's discourse. I don't know how what's happening in and around the Ottawa area, although I do know that in Gatineau, the mayor stepped down just saying, I can't deal with this anymore. And I've met any number of elected officials, especially municipally. So the more direct the contact with the public, the more you're likely to see people popping out of their computer screens. And what I mean by that is that people who used to content themselves to sit in front of their screen and type away on their keyboard and say all sorts of rude and nasty and obscene and horrible things about this, that, or the other thing, they can walk into the hall where the municipal council meeting is taking place. And you're getting the same sort of behavior, and you're getting a lot of politicians who are being attacked. A lot of politicians are relatively young on the municipal level, very often more women than men. And the rude behavior is something that I do think has a lot to do with social media. But that's not politicians amongst themselves, Christy. That's the public towards the politicians.
So to that end, there's a point of this letter, and I can't go through all of the recommendations. There are 8 of them, where they're calling on the government to do more. They're asking politicians to search out the root cause of the tensions, to support hate initiatives, what constitutes hate speech under law. Here's one that I find kind of interesting, though, Tom, to fund the development of curricula in primary, secondary, and post-secondary to increase community-level empathy. Well, I don't even know how you do that or what that would mean. But do you think any of those are worth pursuing?
Well, I think that education is a key component. Getting people to know the difference between real news and fake news, because fake news actually does exist, then, yeah, sure, let them understand how to develop critical thinking. That's a part of it. Empathy, I mean, that's part of ethics. That's part of any religious cursus. It's complicated because we have a very diverse and multi-ethnic and multi-religious society, but that's also something that can be worked on, working on defining common values. But again, it's this type of sweeping thing that you sense, okay, you're reading it, you're going, okay, so this is about Israel, Hamas. But then it's not, because they're trying to give other examples but that. Look, I was driving in the Côte-des-Neiges area of Montreal just a couple of weeks ago. And right in front of the Cummings Center, a large center for a volunteer center, mostly for the Jewish community, there was a massive protest outside. And the people were being prevented from leaving or getting in. And it was one-sided, that protest. Right across the street, there were a few people with an Israeli flag trying to protest back. The police told the people with the Israeli flag to get out of there. And then they let the other ones, you know, spend their vial and get out after hours of blocking people inside and not letting others in. So, I mean, there is indeed something that can and should be done. That's the part that I was saying was a hint. You know, when they say, well, know the definition of hate speech, etc. Yes, there are definitely rules under Canadian law against what you can and can't say. We have freedom of speech, and we should cherish it, and we should protect it. But there are things that go way beyond that. And I gave the example of this self-styled imam in Montreal who went way beyond the pale, but we're still waiting to find out if there's going to be any criminal accusation or not. And I think that that's where some of this has to mature. I think that the police have to be given better understanding of what constitutes a crime under those provisions and when action has to be taken against someone, for example, accosting a minister who's trying peacefully to walk in the street and tells her to her face and in front of the RCMP detail, no, you're not allowed to walk peacefully in the street because it's my job to harass you.
Final point to you, Tom Mulcair. I just wanted to ask about politicians and decorum in the House of Commons, because that's another place that a lot of our listeners are pointing out that there's a lot of yelling and jeering and heckling. Do you think that the behavior by politicians in the House has gone downhill?
No, I think just the opposite. I started there 17 years ago, and I can tell you that the jeering and the heckling and the misbehavior was far worse back then. Much, much worse. And it was often directed at women. And that's been picked up and people have become more sensitive to it. Is there still jeering? Yep. Is there always going to be? You bet. And it's part of having a political system that's based on direct representation of human beings who get hot under the collar, who will sometimes go too far in debate. That's why you need a strong, credible speaker who's respected on all sides. And that's why you need to cherish those institutions as well. But the general proposition that people just state as fact, oh, that, you know, discourse and, you know, the debates in the House far worse than this used to be, that is, in my experience, simply not the case. And by the way, I've seen worse, not just in the House. I mean, the debates, interestingly enough, the debates in Quebec City were far more rough and tumble at the National Assembly than they were in Ottawa. But the jeering was actually worse in Ottawa. So, yes, you would get heckled during your question and question period. They seem to have toned a lot of that down. So to the general idea, are things much worse in the House of Commons than they used to be? I don't think that there's any evidence of that either.
Well, it was quite a complicated and complex open letter, but Tom Mulcair, it was a pleasure diving into
great
the various points with you. Thank you so much.
All the best, Christy. Take good care.
Tom Mulcair, who's a CTV political analyst and former NDP leader, so he's more than familiar with life on Parliament Hill. But I do think, even though it's kind of a complicated, vague letter, that it warrants discussion because so many people have voiced this in various ways through the text board. I get messages like this all the time. People complaining that the world is angry, people complaining that you can't really have a debate anymore, that if you have a difference in opinion, that automatically means disrespect instead of further conversation or curiosity.
You got a fast car. I got a job that pays all my bills.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
A couple east of Ottawa is out nearly $2,000 after their contractor allegedly took off with their deposit, and tracking him down has been nothing but dead ends. CTV's Katie Griffin has been digging into this story and joins us in studio. Hi, Katie.
Hello, Christy.
What happened?
So, take you back to about a year ago, the Vandenbergs from Clarence Creek, they wanted to refresh their kitchen. They had purchased the house. They wanted to replace their laminate countertop with a quartz one. So they found a contractor on Facebook. He had great reviews at the time. They really liked him. They got a good vibe from him when he came to their house to check everything out, to take the measurements. And so they liked him, but they decided to put the reno off for a year to save up more money, of course, with high interest rates and everything like that. So fast forward to February of this year, they reached out again to say, okay, we're ready to go. Let's do it. They went out. They picked out a quartz slab that they liked, and they sent this man a 50% deposit. So it was just over $1,700. And they thought, we've dealt with other contractors before. This is what we've done with them. Never had an issue. Still have good vibes from him. So it was supposed to be delivered to this shop on March 12th. Couple days went by, they hadn't heard anything, the installation was coming up, still didn't hear anything. And they've been phoning, emailing, texting, checking out different places where his business was listed. And they really just kept hitting dead ends. So here is what Gabrielle Vandenberg had to say when she knew that something was probably really wrong.
This was when the red flags really started, because the supplier told me that an order had never been placed and that our pick ticket was still sitting on their desk.
So not a good feeling. Their stomachs dropped. Obviously, not only do they not have a counter, they're out their $1,700. So again, they tried reaching out to him. No response whatsoever. There are a couple of addresses that are listed on the Granite Ottawa website. That's the name of the company. And so she went to them. And so did we. And we discovered that the properties exist, the buildings exist, but none of them belong to Granite Ottawa. None of them house Granite Ottawa. There's actually one here in the Byward Market that's a co-working space. They said, we don't rent to this person. They're not here. There's another showroom, quote unquote showroom, that's also belonging to a different company. And so we've tried to reach out to this man several times, have not heard back. However, after we started asking questions, we even went to an address of an associated business in Maniwaki. After we started asking questions, the Vandenbergs got half of that 50% deposit back. So out of the $1,700, they got $875 back. So We don't know if they're going to get the rest of their money back, but it's just been a really, really brutal experience for them all. And here's what Jason had to say.
It was heart-wrenching. It took the wind out of our sails, really. A mix between being embarrassed that we fell for it and anger that it was a thing that we were going through.
So what does that mean for the couple now?
They're obviously grateful that they have some of the money back. Apparently, he had said that he had been in an accident. He was going to have to shut his company down, but they'd be getting money back in installments. And she said she didn't really buy that because the accident allegedly happened a couple days after the slab was supposed to be installed. And she talked to other alleged victims who said that this was their situation a year ago. So she said, even if that, you know, happened now, what about them? So they obviously still need to get their kitchen done. They've taken off all the backsplash in their kitchen and coffee bar area in anticipation that, you know, you'd get the countertops in and then you would re-backsplash it. So they obviously still have to do the work, but that's going to cost them more money now, right? Because you have to meet another contractor. You're going to have to do another deposit. And not to mention the trust issues, right? After going through something like this, you're going to be pretty particular and pretty nervous the next time. Because regardless of how much money it is, it's a lot of money for people to,
it is. And,
to
and
hand
people
over.
Save up all that money to go through renovations. Then you're living in somewhat of a construction zone. Yep. It's not exactly pleasant to cook in a kitchen like that. I always feel so bad for people that go through this.
So again, we've tried to reach him several times, have not heard back, but they have gotten some of their money back. And I should point out that Ontario Provincial Police were investigating. They also tried to track him down. But now that some of the money has been returned, they say they're considering it a civil matter in nature. We'll be following up with this.
That story coming up tonight on CTV. Thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you.
It's Katie Griffin, CTV Ottawa reporter.